fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite film starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt in honor of the new film Flora and Son hitting Apple TV Plus this weekend. I cannot wait to delve into the career of this wonderfully talented actor that I think is personally super underrated. The name is popular. People know Joseph Gordon-Levitt's name by heart, but he's not talked about as much when talking about some of the most talented actors working today. And he's also proven himself to be quite an interesting talent behind the camera as well. So I cannot wait to delve into his career, and I'm very excited to welcome today's guests. Our guest today is Thomas Stoneham Judge. He is the founder of For Real, VP of the Seattle Film Critics Society, and a Rotten Tomatoes approved critic. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Brian, thank you so much for having me. I am pretty excited to do this. When you sent out the invite to do one of these episodes with you, I was just like, yeah, let's find a topic we can talk about. And JGL sounds like a really good one to talk about. So looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely. You cannot go wrong with talking about JGL. There's just no complaints. If anyone ever says, oh, let's talk about JGL, and I'm like, I could talk about him all day. I really don't care. but before we get into talking about JGL, I'd just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
Well, August 9th, 1990, I was born. And from there, we can fast forward a little bit. No, honestly, film is just, I'm a big fan of storytelling. I like taking in good stories, and film has just been the way for me to best appreciate the art of storytelling. If you know me, you know Lord of the Rings are my favorite movies ever, and you know that was kind of my gateway drug into film, so to speak. Was watching the Lord of the Rings movies when those came out, and ever since then, I've just been seeking out all different kinds of cinema. And you know, we both just got back from TIFF. Film festivals have been an awesome opportunity to explore film that a lot of people don't even realize is out there. You know, we have our mainstream blockbusters, and those are great. Those are entertaining. We enjoy going to the theaters for those. But man, some of the gems that we find at film festivals, it just really inspires me to be as involved in the industry as possible. And For Real has really been a great way for me to do that. I've been able to have some great conversations with filmmakers, with actors, with behind the scenes talent. And it's just, I guess I'm just reflecting on it right now. It's so interesting to see how this interest in storytelling has really blossomed into this opportunity to be more involved in, you know, film and appreciation and criticism at times, and yeah, just really be a part of it. So yeah, it's been a great journey so far.
That's so exciting. That's so great that you're able to follow this journey and do all these cool things, interview people, network with a bunch of fellow film geeks all over the globe, attend these film festivals. That's just so exciting. And yeah, again, to hang out with you at TIFF was such a highlight for me of the festival. It was so great to finally meet you in person, watch a couple of movies with you. Mm-hmm. And now we're here podcasting together again, which is very, very exciting. This is obviously your first time on this podcast, but this isn't the first time we've podcast together. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to listen to a fantastic discussion involving me and Thomas, head on over to the Rolling Tape, where I podcast for. Listen to our discussion on past lives. It will make you feel so many emotions because we felt so many emotions when we were recording that episode. Yeah. So just go listen to that. Go listen to us talking about what I still believe is the best film of the year so far.
Yeah, I agree. There's still a little bit of year to go, but man, it's going to be very hard to top that for me. But yeah, that podcast episode, check it out.
I agree. It's going to be tough for some of the top past lives, but steering away from past lives to talk about someone that isn't related to past lives, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So I always like to ask these curveball questions to my guests whenever we talk about the topic that we're talking about. So you're given the opportunity to take one Joseph Gordon-Levitt character out to dinner, whether it's with your family, friends, or just yourself. Which character would it be and why?
That is a curveball question. Really, really good question. Wow, I'm looking through his filmography right now. You know what? I think the answer that hits me immediately is probably the one that everyone reveres most from Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and that's from 500 Days of Summer. He's just such a charming character in that movie. I would hang out with him, at least that character, all day. And I think that would be a fun version of JGL to associate with.
Would it be weird if I said that I wanted to get dinner with Don John?
There are weirder answers.
He's a fellow New Jerseyan, so I kind of feel obliged to do that. That's and he's fair. Also Italian, and I love Italian people. Mm-hmm. And I could ask him, tell me how you got Scarlett Johansson. Give me tips on how to do that, man. Give me all the tips and also the workout tips, because, oh my God, like, you see Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 500 Days of Summer, he's so scrawny in that.
He is. It's still early on in his. He's like, yeah.
He's so jacked in Don John. It's so weird because 500 Days of Summer came out in 2009. Mm-hmm. Don John came out in 2013. So it's like, what the heck did you do to yourself in the 4 years in between, buddy? Oh my God. No, but Don John would be my answer. That would be my answer. Although Tom from 500 Days of Summer would be a close second. He mm-hmm. likes The Graduate. So, you know, that's, and The Smiths. So that's a win in my book.
That's all valid.
Absolutely. And then going into our topic of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, why do you think a lot of people are fans of him? Obviously, at the top, I did say that he's not, his name is popular, but again, when you talk about some of the best actors working today, he doesn't really come up in that discussion as much. There was a period where he was on fire. He was doing like 3 or 4 movies a year, and he's kind of taken a bit of a step back these last few years. But why do you think people get excited whenever they see Joseph Gordon-Levitt's name attached to a project? Why do you think people are fans of him, and what makes you such a fan of Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
You know what? Joseph Gordon-Levitt is I think, one of the, I don't even want to say underrated. I think people recognize his talent. He is a very talented actor, and I think that that's why when his name is attached to a project, we pay attention to it. He's so versatile in the types of roles that he does, and I think maybe that notion that we get that he kind of is under the radar kind of comes from this tendency of him to pick up roles that aren't as involved as they could be. But we know that when he does get one of those super involved roles, that he's gonna crush it, right? And so, I think that he's such a multi-talented, multifaceted entertainer, whether it be acting, singing, filmmaking. He just is so good at all of that. And so, you know, when you see something that Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a part of, you know that there's going to be quality to it and that it's going to be entertaining. And depending on what version of Joseph Gordon-Levitt appeals most to you, you know, you're probably going to like the film. Like I was saying, with his versatility, like, he can do drama, he can do comedy, he can do action. He's so he just fits in with any role he takes on, and I think that is a really special thing for an actor to be able to be that versatile. So I certainly appreciate his talent, all of his talents, and I think that. That's what I've come to expect when I see Joseph Gordon-Levitt attached to a film, is that, okay, he's going to bring talent to this. And I'm excited to see it. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah, I've been a fan of Joseph Gordon-Levitt since I was a kid. I remember constantly watching Angels in the Outfield on loop all the time growing up. I loved that movie when I was a kid, and it's been a hot minute since I've seen it. And as I got older and started taking my love of film seriously, and I started seeing him tackle these different roles, I would always get excited to see what he would bring to said role. And like you said, he's so versatile. He doesn't stick to just one specific genre. I love that he's done practically everything. He's only in his early 40s, and he's been acting since he was a kid, but he's done literally everything. He's done dramas and comedies and action films, superhero films, period pieces, sci-fi films, thrillers, he's done it all, and the guy could sing too really, really well. He's quite a song and dance man. He hasn't really utilized it that much on screen. I mean, thankfully, with the film that we're doing this episode in honor of, he gets to show his singing chops there. But I've loved Joseph Gordon-Levitt for a long time. I do think that, again, not to say that he's underrated, and he's certainly not overrated either. I just wish that he would get more recognition compared to a lot of the other actors that we have working today, because he is talented. He brings it all. He's always bringing his A game. He always gives 110% to everything that he's in. And I've been such a fan for a long time, and I will never stop being a fan. And I cannot wait to delve into our favorite JGL films. So I just say, without further ado, let's get into the list. So, Thomas, what is your number five favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt film of all time?
I don't know if you can call this a guilty pleasure or not. And then maybe this movie doesn't register on most people's charts. But I just remember watching this and just thinking, this is just a really fun movie. And I had a lot of fun with it. So for number five, I'm going to put Premium Rush on my list. I really just want to shout out this movie. I just want people to know that maybe it's not a top five film for everybody, but man, it's a fun one. It has that high octane kind of notion to it, and you know, it's even though it's just like riding a bike around New York, it's fun. It's a lot of fun, and I don't know how else to explain why that movie is so appealing to me, but I just had fun with it, and I encourage people to, like, you know, just have fun with it. So yeah, that's what I have to say about it.
You know, that movie is a lot of fun. It's very entertaining, and it embraces how entertaining and ridiculous it is. Yeah, it's about a guy riding a bike through New York, and then some shenanigans go down and everything. And I will tell you that as someone who goes to New York a lot, I live right outside New York City. Watching this movie, I cannot imagine just filming and everything, because a lot of the sequences were him riding the bike to the point where he actually like hurt himself quite a few times when making this film. There's this really terrifying video where he got this giant splinter on his arm and blood just going down, and I'm like, oh my god, how is he so calm during this? It's absolutely thrilling. And what I always found interesting about Premium Rush was who directed it. It's directed by David Koepp, and David Koepp has stepped behind the camera a few times, but he's primarily known as a writer. He wrote Jurassic Park, Carlito's Way, the first Mission Impossible, the first Spider-Man, War of the Worlds. And he has directed some films too. I mean, Secret Window with Johnny Depp, he directed Ghost Town, and then Premium Rush. And yeah, I mean, it's a high-octane action thriller, and Michael Shannon continues to play the terrifying guy that he always plays. But it's so much fun. It's entertaining. It's only a brisk 92 minutes. It flies by. There's not an ounce of fat to be found. It's not the most original movie in the world. It's not the most inventive movie out there, but it's a damn good time. It's a really entertaining time. It would definitely be right outside my top 10, but in terms of entertaining JGL films, it's definitely in the top 5 for sure.
I do think when we get to the end of our lists, I might have some angry people at how pushback on how Premium Rush makes my top 5 and certain other films are not a part of my mentions, but I'll reckon with them later.
And going into my number 5, such a drastic different film from Premium Rush. Funny enough, they did come out in the same year, but Premium Rush is a fun movie. This is not so much a fun movie, and that's Looper, directed by Rian Johnson. This was their second collaboration together, or third collaboration together. I don't know. He's collaborated with Rian Johnson on every single film that he's done, which I think is really cool, but this was the second time where he headlined a film directed by Rian Johnson. I've always found Looper to have one of the coolest premises in any sci-fi film that has come out in the last 15 years. So it evolves around contract killers who are titled Loopers, hired by criminal syndicates from the future to terminate victims who they send back through time. Now, Joseph Gordon-Levitt stars in this film. He is one of the top contract killers in this business. And then one of the victims that comes back that he has to kill is him from the future, and he's played by Bruce Willis. I just think the concept behind this is so unique and so fascinating, and it's one of the coolest sci-fi films to have come out in recent memory. Rian Johnson wrote and directed this with such class, and it's so thrilling and high-octane, and it's just so fresh. It's a fresh story done really beautifully, and one of the reasons why it works so well is because of the performances. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is great. Bruce Willis is great. And also shout out to Emily Blunt, who's also fantastic in this. But I haven't seen Looper in a hot minute, but I remember when it came out, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was watching it constantly on the streaming service or the premium channels or wherever it was on. I find sci-fi films to come out nowadays to focus so much on the scope and not the substance. Looper beautifully finds a way of finding a balance between the two of them, but this isn't some fantastical visual effects heavy film like a Blade Runner, for instance. This is more self-contained compared to all the other sci-fi films that most of the common mainstream audiences have seen, but I found this to be so, so cool, and JGL is great, and whoever did the makeup on him, huge round of applause, because they made him look exactly like Bruce Willis. It was really uncanny how he didn't really look like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He kind of looked like a young Bruce Willis. And I never thought, oh, who's going to play an older JGL? Oh, Bruce Willis. But Bruce Willis did a great job in this. And this is actually Bruce Willis's best year, in my opinion, because he did this in Moonrise Kingdom. And those are both fantastic films, not just in general, but for Bruce Willis's career in terms of his performances. I really am a big fan of Looper. And I think if it were in the hands of someone different, it could have worked out so poorly. But thankfully, because Rian Johnson brought so much originality to it and good old-fashioned action, I think it's a huge, huge win. So Looper is my number 5. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
Looper is one that I wish I was able to have appreciated as much as everyone else did when it came out. I think... And I don't know why I was so underwhelmed with Looper. Not that it's a bad movie. I think that I owe it another chance. I think that I've matured a lot in my understanding of film and sci-fi. And Rian Johnson, of course, I think I need to go back and watch that movie with a new lens. And I think that that's one that people are going to push back on and be like, let me get this straight. You put Premium Wush on your list and not Looper. We can have conversations about that, guys, and you know, give me a chance to watch it again at some point, because it also has been a while for me since I've seen it, mainly because, again, I didn't connect with it in the same way that most people did. But what I can say I remember about that movie is that the performances are fantastic. It is excellently cast. I mean, this movie came out at a time when I wasn't very familiar with Emily Blunt. And so, you know, and Paul Dano is in it as well, who, again, for me, has become a much bigger A-list actor to pay attention to, since then. So I owe this movie another chance. Don't hate me, guys, but it's not on my top 5, but I'm glad that you mentioned it, Brian.
Hey, that's totally fine. We all have those films that are universally loved that we just didn't fully connect to. But I definitely think that if you were to watch it again, you might gain some appreciation towards it. There have been so many films that I have watched to where the first time I saw it, I'm like, I get the hype, but I'm not on that level. And then I would watch it again and be like, okay, now I totally understand why everybody loves it, why everybody celebrates it, and why people call this one of the best films of said year or said genre or what have you. And yeah, a lot of people are going to be pissed off that's not even in my top 2, so right. Don't worry. It's I think people are going to be more pissed at me than they are at you, because, you know, can't always get what you want. But, you know, going into our number 4s, what is your pick?
You know what? I'm going to throw a popular one in for number 4, and that's going to be Inception. I think that movie, it has such a stacked cast. It is so easy. It could have been so easy for any one of those actors to get lost in the amount of talent that exists in that cast. But of course, we're talking about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who knows how to hold his own. And in this movie, we see him be such a prominent component of a very strong ensemble. And I really appreciate that a lot. Nolan is one of my favorite filmmakers. I think what he does with storytelling and, you know, playing with time in a lot of his movies, is just so captivating for me, in the realm of storytelling and entertainment. But, you know, specifically about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I just, he's such a memorable part of this movie. And it's not that he's playing, a super, like, involved character like I'm going to talk about in a couple other of my selections here. You know, he's essentially Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this movie, but he is such a presence in the film still, and I think that that's something that really comes out when Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in a film. He has a presence, and I think that that was very strong here in Inception. He absolutely fit into this ensemble. He helped make the movie as great as it is, and Inception honestly is it's a film that really ranks high among my all-time favorites, so it's really cool to have him a part of one of those kind of films, because I do appreciate his talent, and to see that contribute to one of my favorite films ever is amazing every time I watch it.
So Inception is not on my list, but it is here we go. Right outside the top five for me. It's right outside the top five for me. It's really hard to have put that film on the list considering that that ensemble was so stacked. I mean, you have Leonardo DiCaprio, Ken Watanabe, Elliot Page, Michael Caine, Tom Hardy, Cillian Murphy, Marion Cotillard. You have this stacked ensemble in that film. So it's like, how am I supposed to put it on the list if, like, said actor that we're talking about isn't even the lead? But thankfully, Joseph Gordon-Levitt does have a lot of screen time in the film. And he's a great presence to the story. He invokes a good amount of charm and comedy. And that's the thing. He's just so fucking charming in, like, everything that he's in. So he just adds his very cool charisma to, like, all the roles that he brings to life on screen. And this is no exception. I particularly love the back and forth that goes on between him and Tom Hardy during certain sequences. I always found that to be a major highlight. And it's so funny how both of them later on works together again in The Dark Knight Rises, which was also obviously directed by Christopher Nolan, a film that is unfortunately also not on my list. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Inception. It's not my favorite Christopher Nolan film. You guys can listen to the Christopher Nolan episode that we did a few months back to find out what my favorite Nolan film is. This would definitely be in the top five for sure, but it's not my number one. Yeah, I love Inception. It's great. And that hallway sequence is probably my favorite scene in the entire movie. And
it's
Joseph
so
Gordon-Levitt's
good. Scene. So it's so good. It's iconic.
It's incredible. It's honestly, like, there are people that are like, oh, that's the only memorable scene in the movie. And I'm like, actually, that's false. There's so many memorable sequences in that movie. And that hallway sequence happens to be one of many. It's too good. It's too good. And it's great that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in that scene. But yeah, Inception, that's a great pick. I'm bummed that it didn't make my list, but, you know, it was a tough list to put together. This was honestly not an easy list to put together, because Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in a lot of really strong films. And going into my number four, I'm going to go with one that you don't frequently see on ranked Joseph Gordon-Levitt list, probably because this isn't the film that a lot of people immediately think of when they think of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So I am a huge fan of animated films, just like a lot of people are. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt has done a lot of animated films. He's done a small amount. But to me, the best one that I think he's done was when he was in the English dub of The Wind Rises, which is my number four pick. I've talked to Thomas about this before, and I'm just going to repeat it here, even though there's a whole podcast episode about it. I'm a huge fan of Hayao Miyazaki. He would be on my Mount Rushmore of filmmakers. I love nearly everything he's done. I have seen his newest film. You guys could go find my thoughts on it somewhere on Twitter or Letterboxd or what have you, but I am a big fan of Miyazaki, and The Wind Rises is actually one of my favorite films that he's directed. So this is a fictionalized biographical take on the life of Hirokoshi. He's a guy who designed a bunch of planes for the Japanese military, and this guy doesn't necessarily like what these planes are being used for, but he's always had this dream of building planes, flying planes, just bringing them to life. And it's a very beautiful film. It's definitely one of Miyazaki's most mature films to date. It might be his most adult film that he's ever directed. And I just think that in terms of the English dub cast, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt was a perfect choice to bring this character to life. He's so quiet and very restrained and laid back. Joseph Gordon-Levitt adds a bit of a softness to his voice. Like, if you hear his voice, it's not high-pitched, but it's definitely very loud and energetic. But then in this film, he's so quiet and lowers it to a very lower register and everything. And it definitely threw me off at first because I'm like, that doesn't sound like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but I could hear a little bit of him in it. But I think it's one of the best performances that he's brought to life. And bringing an animated performance and delivering could be a really difficult task. Yeah, people may think, oh, you're just talking, so you're not really doing a lot. It's not easy to nail a great voice performance. There's a lot that goes into a vocal performance, which is why I think it's such an underappreciated form of acting. People talk about live action acting, how you do all these movements and everything. You see the person's face, but anime, you only hear their voice. But people could convey so much just through their voice. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt does that really beautifully in this film. And he's done that, obviously, with other voice performances. But this is, like, the cherry on top for me in terms of his vocal performances. But I also just think the film is exceptional. I know that there are people that consider this lower tier Miyazaki. I think it's upper tier Miyazaki. And I know that may not be a hot take, because there are some Miyazaki fans out there that legit think everything that he makes is a masterpiece. I don't think that at all. He's had some films that are not masterpieces for me, and that's okay. Every director has that. My favorite filmmaker working today is Paul Thomas Anderson. Not everything he makes is a 5-star film, and that's okay. Like, that's, you know, that's totally fine. But I love The Wind Rises. It's beautifully animated. The story is so haunting. It's so powerful and so moving. And I really love the relationship between him and his wife, who, fittingly enough, is also voiced by Emily Blunt. So it was a nice little Looper reunion for the two of them. And I think it's great. I think that when people talk about their favorite Miyazaki, they don't really bring this up that much, which is a shame. And obviously, he had The Boy and the Heron come out. It's coming out later this year. I've seen it already. Thomas saw it already. Like, we've all seen it. All of us.
Not yet. Not yet, actually. I have a ticket to see it. I mixed you up
with someone else.
No, it's okay. I have a ticket to see it in Vancouver, so I will be seeing it soon. And I appreciate everything that you're saying about Miyazaki. So The Wind Rises is one that I have not watched yet. I really wanted to watch it in preparation for The Boy and the Heron, but I had so many other things that I was trying to prepare for TIFF, and then I didn't get to Boy and the Heron at TIFF, and so... I just need to do like a Miyazaki retrospective. Like, I need to go back and actually watch, because I haven't seen, there's a quite a few of them that I have not seen. But the ones that I have seen are fantastic. I need to figure it out and get it together. So, this is certainly on my list.
You absolutely do.
Yeah, this is on my list to see. I'm happy that you're mentioning it because everything you're saying about voice acting is entirely right. Voice acting is criminally, criminally underappreciated, which actually will tie into an honorable mention that I have later on. But yeah, I do think that there should be more recognition for how much acting goes into voice acting. I appreciate that you put this on your list, because I think too many people overlook the work that goes into voice acting.
Absolutely. And I mean, yeah, The Wind Rises is exceptional. It definitely felt like a swan song for him, because this was originally the last film that he was doing. Like, he was very lenient on this one being it. And it definitely felt like a swan song. It's like, oh, this kind of feels like a goodbye to everything. And then The Boy and the Heron kind of also felt like a swan song for him. But then he came out and said, oh, no, I have another one. And I'm like, dude, just stop telling us it's your last one. And then we watch it. And, like, I mean, I understand you love to build up suspense, but stop telling us it's the last one. And then it ends up not being. He's been doing this for like 20 years. It's like, bruh, like, cool it already. But no, I love The Wind Rises. It's my number four. Obviously, you brought that you haven't seen it. But I'm really curious to hear your thoughts when you do see it. And I'm especially curious to hear your thoughts on Boy and the Heron when you check that out. Mm-hmm. But going into our number threes, what is your pick?
Number three. Again, I don't know if this is one that's going to register on most people's top five, but this is one where I think he really invested himself into the character, and I greatly appreciate that. And so for number three, I'm putting The Walk. This is one that was, it's a feel good film. There's suspense, there's tension, there's acrophobia. A part of it, which is all great. It's such a cinematic experience, but at the core of it is Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing the French character who did this. And when the movie starts and he has that French accent, it's so heavy. To me it sounds so authentic.
It's very heavy.
And it sounds authentic. It's hard to pull off accents. There are a number of movies I've watched this year that's like, that accent's not right. Good try. But that's not quite correct. It doesn't sound very, very authentic. But I think in this one, he really dives into being that magician character, that thrill seeker, and that French character that does this. And so it's such a strong performance from him in a movie that... that seems kind of basic. A guy walks across a wire. Like, sure, it's a very basic premise, but there's a lot to it with his performance, with the character, and also with the homage to the Twin Towers. I think that it was very tastefully done to pay respect to the towers in New York and New York culture. But everything about that movie to me is just so well done. And I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt with his heavy French accent and his performance throughout the movie and the tension and everything just makes it that much better.
So this is not on my list. I actually really like The Walk, but I haven't seen it since it came out, so I don't know where I would stand on it if I were to watch it again now. I do remember this being one of my favorite IMAX experiences ever, because the IMAX 3D for this was unlike anything that I had ever seen. Like, it was so stunning. It was so impressive. Obviously, especially during The Walk itself. I remember hearing about the story, not hearing about it until I saw the trailer for this movie. I was like, huh, what is this movie, The Walk? What is this? And then I read, it's like, oh, some guy walked across the Twin Towers in the 70s. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. There's no way. There's no fucking way that happened. And the fact that it happened is insane. I didn't know that they even made a documentary about it, an Oscar-winning documentary, actually. I like The Walk a lot. I think visually, it's really impressive what Zemeckis was able to do. It's really impressive work of how, like, it felt like I was actually watching someone. I felt like I had watched someone rebuild the towers, and then you actually were shooting him literally walking across the towers. But it's incredible how there was a lot of CGI. I don't know how much practical effects they were utilized in this film, but I think this is an underrated entry of Robert Zemeckis' filmography, who I think is a filmmaker that has kind of stumbled these last few years, unfortunately. He hasn't really had a winner in a very long time, unfortunately, but I really do like The Walk. And to talk about JGL, I think the performance itself, the acting is very good. The accent is a lot to process. It was a lot to process on initial viewing, even though I had seen the trailer, so I had kind of gotten the gist of what he sounded like. But just him talking with a very heavy French accent going, I need you to help me pull this off. I'm like, okay, well, settle down. First of all, this is a lot to process on one viewer. Just let's take it back a notch. But I think he's very charming in the role. I think he's very likable, and he has this dream. He has this dream of just being this guy who walks across on wires, and then he's like, okay, what could I do for my next big act? And then he decides, oh, I'm going to go to the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, and do this. And I really like how you brought up how it pays respect to the towers, to New York, and obviously the people whose lives were taken away on that horrific day 20 years ago, 22 years ago to be exact. And As someone who obviously goes to New York a lot, someone who grew up going to New York a lot and who lives directly outside of New York, and just knowing that there are people who were so heavily impacted by this, like, you could see the Twin Towers. According to my parents, you would be able to see the Twin Towers not too far from where we live. And no, it's a very feel-good film. It's a very entertaining film. It has great comedy injected into it. And the walk sequence itself, oh my God. So I wouldn't say that I have a fear of heights, but there was a portion where I was watching this and I'm just like, my hands are clinging to the seat. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't. I literally cannot. I literally cannot. But it was so impressive to see. Great work on that, on the VFX team's part. But yeah, The Walk, that's an underrated JGL film. Not a lot of people talk about that one. You haven't really heard anyone talk about that probably since it came out, to be honest. I think it was supposed to be this major awards contender, but then it ended up not being the case, unfortunately. But I think if it should have gotten something, it should have at least gotten the nomination for visual effects, because the visual effects here are really impressive. You could say that the film isn't the greatest, and it's definitely not the greatest, but the VFX work on display is really impressive. And again, that ending really just gut me. That last shot on the Twin Towers, oh my God, that really hit hard. That really hit hard. It was very beautiful. It wasn't in your face or anything. They handled it very well, which I really commend Zemeckis and the entire team behind this film for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All of those are valid points. And I wish that I had been able to see it in IMAX. I wasn't quite as involved with like film premieres and releases and everything. And so at that point, I think I was still just like catching movies whenever I would hear about them, or maybe on streaming or whatever. But even in standard, like it reminds me of a film like Free Solo, where you have all of those like height, those downward shots from really high up, and your hands just get super clammy. Yep. And oh my God. That just lends itself to being a phenomenal IMAX experience. So like, if someone wants to resurrect this film and just like put it in IMAX again for like a weekend, I will be there.
Absolutely. Wholeheartedly agree. And going into my number three, I'm going to go with his directorial debut, Don John, the only feature that he's directed thus far, which is really unfortunate, because Don John, I think, was a really impressive debut. It wasn't the most extravagant film. It wasn't the most unique film or anything, but it was a really interesting take on the rom-com genre, where it poked fun at rom-coms, but then it was also a rom-com of its own. So, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he plays a guy named John. He's a Italian-American living in New Jersey. New Jersey, major respect. And he loves his independent life. He is so frequent about everything about him. He's always like, there's only a few things I care about in my life: my body, my pad, my ride, my family, my church, my boys, my girls, and most importantly, his porn. He's a porn act. That's a very pivotal part of this story. He's very much into his porn. He doesn't want to settle down and be in a relationship with anyone. His parents are very much into like, oh, you should go and meet some girl and everything. But he's like, nah, fam, I'm not like that at all. So one day he's at the bar, one night he's at the bar, and then he stumbles across Scarlett Johansson. Now, if you're like any other guy in the world, you would not take your eyes off Scarlett Johansson. And he wants to pursue that and everything. And she is very much someone that wants a relationship, but he's very much into the casual sex life. But then he takes a complete 180. He's like, you know what? I do really like this girl. I'm going to go for it and everything. But there's one thing stepping in the way, and that's his porn addiction. This is a really funny movie. I think it's very entertaining. It's very over the top and ridiculous with the comedy, but it's so subtle too. And then the film takes a complete 180 and kind of becomes a drama, where we're introduced to a character played by Julianne Moore, and I'm not going to go into detail of what her character is and what purpose she has to the story, but it definitely takes a turn that I know that some people are thrown off by, because you know, this starts off as a comedy, but then all of a sudden it becomes this serious drama. But I love it personally. I think it's a great, great film. I think it's one of the most impressive debuts from an actor that I've seen in the past decade. I cannot believe that this film is 10 years old. Literally, so we're recording this on Sunday, September 24th. It came out in theaters on September 27th, 2013. Oh. We're just a couple of days shy of its 10-year anniversary, which is nuts. I remember when this came out, it premiered at Sundance, and everyone was like, this film is great, it's so good. And then it came out, and I love it. I really, really loved it. And there's one particular frequent sequence that happens in the film. It, like, goes about his day. It's him driving around. It's just him screaming in Italian, being like, ah, blah, blah, gabagool, whatever. And then he runs into the church, and the camera, like, pans up and everything. It's a very clever, repetitive thing that goes on. And I'm like, this is kind of interesting. He also shot this on film, major respect. And, yeah, I love Don John. I love Don John. And I always love how he made a joke being like he specifically wrote the role of Barbara for Scarlett Johansson. And I'm like, all right, we obviously know why you wrote it specifically for Scarlett Johansson. And, hey, if I were in your shoes, I would do the exact same thing, buddy. But, no, and also the fake Italian New Jersey, New York accent from both of them, especially from her, is really incredible. Like, you tend to forget that neither of them are, you know, New Yorkers or anything. So, their accents are so thick, especially hers. And it's pretty incredible. It's really fantastic. And they work off each other really, really well. And I would like to hope that down the road, they work together again. Also, major shout out to Tony Danza as John's father. Great supporting character. Great little Angels in the Outfield reunion. So good. Don John. A film that not many people talk about anymore, and they should, because it's one of the better rom-coms to have come out in the past decade. I'm a huge fan. I love Don John. Impressive directorial debut. I would like to hope that Joseph Gordon-Levitt does direct more behind the camera. I know he's dabbled in some TV projects, but this is still the only feature film that he's directed. So hopefully down the road, he does direct a feature again, and I would like to hope that, you know, maybe it's something different. Maybe it is another rom-com. We'll have to see, but Don John is my number three. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
This one's not on my list. But it's not on my list, not because I didn't like it. It's just been so long since I've seen it. And again, I think when I watched it, I didn't have a good enough appreciation for the directorial debut or you know, the rom-com genre. And so I've grown since then. And I think, thank you for mentioning the 10-year anniversary of this movie coming out, because that might just be a good enough excuse to finally go back and rewatch it and watch it in context of, like, what I know now about filmmaking, about Joseph Gordon-Levitt's career so far. And yeah, I do really want to revisit this.
Yeah, it's great. You should definitely check it out. It's really wonderful. And now it's time to transition to our top two. So there are two films that neither of us have brought up that I have a feeling. I feel like we have the same top two.
This is going to be very interesting. I don't know if we have them in the
same order, but this is going to be very interesting. I'm so curious to know what your top two are. So tell us what your second favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt film of all time is.
I'm going to preface this by saying that I obviously was preparing for this podcast. And so there were a couple older films, because I'm not very well versed in his early career. So in the time that I had to kind of prepare for this, you know, in between TIFF and preparing for VIFF and all that stuff, there were a couple movies that I watched. One of them was his feature debut as an actor, Gregory Kay. I watched that one. It's not the greatest performance, not the greatest movie. But the other one I watched is what's entering my top two. And it's so uncomfortable. It's such an uncomfortable film, but it's such a good performance. And that is, Mysterious Skin. I think that what he accomplished in Mysterious Skin, was, it looked effortless for such an uncomfortable topic, for such an uncomfortable movie. He plays this character that's just so free-spirited and so careless and really cavalier and reckless, really, is and it's it was interesting watching this and wondering where this movie's gonna go. But his character is just one of those characters that everyone gravitates to, but he's not not the greatest person to gravitate to. And he wears that swagger so effortlessly in this. He also has a I think it's a Kentucky accent. So talking about accents and how he kind of invests himself into the character with being able to pull off these accents. But this movie, it's such an uncomfortable film, but it's so well done. And his role in the film is so excellently executed. I have to give him props for it. It definitely stands out as one of his best roles to me, especially that early in his career. And you know where he goes with his career from here, but yeah, fantastic performance in Mysterious Skin.
So this is unfortunately one that I have not seen. I was literally going to watch this in between TIFF and when we recorded, but again, just there's such little time to do anything. And also after TIFF, I'm like, I don't want to watch a movie again for at least a week. Like literally at the time of this recording, in between TIFF and when I did this podcast, I just went back to the movies for the first time yesterday. From when was the last day I was at TIFF was on September 12th. So that means for almost 2 weeks, I didn't watch any movies. I just couldn't prepare myself because, you know, when you watch like 30 movies in six days, you're kind of like, I need a break from movies. But Mysterious Skin is a film that I've wanted to watch for a long time. I'm well aware of what it's about and what it tackles and everything. I've heard so many things about it, but I've heard nothing but great things in particular about his performance and what he's able to bring, especially considering that it's still a pretty early entry in his filmography. It's not like he was like 12 when he made this. He was in his early 20s. And, you know, when you look back on everything that he'd done pretty early in his career, you know, like Angels in the Outfield or Third Rock in the Sun, the TV show that kind of launched him into stardom. And then you had 10 Things I Hate About You, you had Treasure Planet, then you had this, and it's like, oh, this is a complete 180 from everything else that he's done. But just hearing what he's able to bring with this role that he's given, especially with this gruesome of a subject matter, I'm so curious to watch it. I know that it's going to be a very difficult watch whenever I get around to it, but it's one that's been on my watch list for a long time, and I'm very excited. And I know that excited may be the wrong word, but I'm really fascinated to see how I'm going to feel about this movie when I get around to it. It sounds like a major, major winner. And I'm really glad that one of us put it on our list because I know that that's a favorite amongst Joseph Gordon-Levitt fans. So it's nice to know that one of us was able to put it on the list.
And just to clarify, like, again, this is a movie that I just recently, like this weekend, picked up just to like prepare for this podcast. I'd wanted to see it for a long time, kind of like you. And it's just, I think it came out in 2004. And I mean, you make very valid points about what we do. It's exhausting to do film festivals. And we watch a lot of movies all year. And so it's really tough to keep up with not only new stuff going to the theaters, but upcoming stuff that's at festivals. And then also go back and try to watch, you know, blind spots from filmmakers and actors' careers. It's tough to get around to it. And so I only just recently finally was able to see this one. And it's heavy, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt really just nails this role so strongly. And when you see it, you'll understand like how awesome of a performance this is.
Absolutely. And my number two, I have a feeling that this is your number one. You know, now you revealing that Mysterious Skin was your number two, I'm like, oh, I guess this particular film isn't even on your list, which is shocking, but we'll save that for later. So my number two is probably the film that a lot of people would put as their number one, and that's 500 Days of Summer, obviously directed by Mark Webb and co-starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel. Great romance movie, one of the best out there for sure. I don't know what else to add about this movie that hasn't been said already these last 14 years since it's come out. This is obviously a favorite among cinephiles and film geeks and also mainstream audiences. This is regarded as one of the coolest rom-coms out there. It's so charming and so quirky, but it's also so honest with its subject. Everyone goes through this particular thing when they fall for a guy or a girl. And I really love the approach that Mark Webb and screenwriters Scott Neustadter and Michael H. Weber bring to this film. This is told in a non-linear structure. It's told out of order, but it honestly makes the impact a lot stronger. I think if this were told in order, the impact wouldn't have landed the way that it did. But I think because it was told out of order, where we see the end of their relationship, then we jump back to the beginning, then maybe we jump into the far middle, and then we go back early on and everything and vice versa. I think it's greatly utilized, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is perfect as Tom. I think what they were trying to go for with casting Tom, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt was the perfect person to play. There's so many layers to this character. He's kind of a goof, he's kind of awkward, but he's also kind of a charmer and everything. And I love him in this movie. And I'm not a big Zooey Deschanel fan. She's not my favorite. She's very plain to me. I don't think she's bad by any means. I love New Girl. I'm a huge New Girl fan. So I can't say that, oh, I hate Zooey Deschanel if I love the show that she's the lead on. But I think she was great as Summer. I think their chemistry together was wonderful. If their chemistry didn't work, the entire film would not have worked. I thought both of them were great together and separately. And I love the soundtrack in the film. I love so many moments in the film. It flies by. It's a brisk 90 minutes. It goes very, very quickly. It definitely gives off vibes of like Annie Hall or High Fidelity and all these other rom-coms that have come out throughout the last 40, 50 years. And my favorite aspect of the movie in particular, aside from the non-linear structure, are the sequences where it shows what actually happened and what's the expectations, where it shows what he's envisioning in his head. I think that's a very unique approach that we hadn't really seen in any romance before, and I think it was utilized very, very cool. The split-screen approach to it was really, really great. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are still like, I don't know if I'm on Tom's side or if I'm on Summer's side. And I will say, without really spoiling anything, when I first saw the movie, I was like, Summer sucks. Fuck her. She stinks. But I rewatched the movie. I've rewatched it a couple of times, but I recently rewatched it again for the show. And I'm like, you know, the movie does such a great job of not making you choose who to side with. And it leaves it up to you, the audience, to pick a side. And I really love that a lot about that. I think it's one of the best rom-coms of the past 15 years. It was a huge sleeper hit, and it's since become one of the most popular rom-coms out there. It did receive a couple award nominations. It was nominated at the Globes for Best Picture, and JGL got nominated for Best Actor. I definitely would have nominated the screenplay for this at the Oscars. I think the screenplay for this is fantastic. And I feel like I have to bring this up because someone did ask me what my favorite sequence of the movie is. Well, I can't hide it because I'm a huge fan of Hall & Oates. When he dances to You Make My Dreams Come True, and it's that quirky, over-the-top sequence, he comes out and everything, and everyone's high-fiving him, and they're dancing in the middle of the streets. I'm like, this is great. This is so great. I love it so much. But yeah, I love 500 Days of Summer. It was almost my number one. I'm not going to lie. There were points when I was making this list where I'm like, is this my number one? Or is this not my number one? But my number one, I think I have more of a personal attachment to than this particular film. But I love 500 Days of Summer. I'm a huge, huge fan of it. And it would have been ridiculous if I didn't include it in my top two, but I'm glad I did, and great film, love it so much, wonderful stuff, and yeah, so, you know, I'm not going to ask you if this is on your list or not, I'm just going to say let's jump into our number ones. So, my thing is, if the film that I have as my number one isn't your number one, I'm going to be shocked if 500 Days of Summer isn't on your number one, isn't your number one, and somehow it ends up not being on your list, obviously, that will also be a shock. So I have no idea what route you're going to go with. I believe you're going to go with a film that starts with the number 5 in the title. There's two options to choose from. So tell us what your favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt film of all time is.
Oh, here we go. The pressure, the suspense. I almost need a drum roll for this. This is great. Honestly, 500 Days of Summer is my favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt film. And I think that the personal connection plays a role in this because I'm pretty sure 500 Days of Summer is the first film I remember seeing Joseph Gordon-Levitt in. I'm pretty sure I'd seen Angels in the Outfield before that. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt wasn't quite on my radar like that. But 500 Days of Summer is the one that I remember most clearly, you know, understanding who he is and like being an actor that I want to start paying attention to after that. So yeah, it does take my number one spot, and for all the reasons that you said, there's very little I can really contribute more to what you said. But it's a charming film. It's an emotional film. It's, you know, it's rom-com at its finest. And honestly, Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel, that is just a match made in Hollywood heaven, in my opinion. I love those two together. They just have so much great chemistry together, both in this and any other project that they're a part of, because I'm sure they've collaborated on other things before. So I love those two together. And I think 500 Days of Summer is just a really great exhibition of their talent, both acting, musically. And I think that, yeah, and I have that personal connection where this is the first time I'm like, oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, that's someone I really want to pay attention to and see what else he does or what else he has done from there. So yeah, for all of those reasons, 500 Days of Summer is my number one pick for JGL.
Well, it's definitely a great number one. It's a fantastic number one.
I sense some disappointment.
But, you know, I would have been okay if this film wasn't your number one. But the fact that it's not on your list, I'm going to need some explanation after I explain why it's my number one. So, obviously, with the questions that I was asking Thomas and everything about the number 5 being the first thing you see in the title, obviously, that means that my number one is 50-50 from 2011. So, this follows Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's a guy that, unfortunately, gets diagnosed with this rare form of cancer. He's always been a clean guy. He doesn't drink, smoke. He's very careful with his health. But then he comes across this terrible situation of how they don't know if he's going to live or he's going to die. And the way to help him cope is that he has his best friend, who's played by Seth Rogen, kind of help him guide himself to that happy spot in the midst of this tragedy. Then he also has his girlfriend, played by Bryce Dallas Howard, and the very villainous role. I mean, oh my god, the places that she goes to, oh, I don't even want to get into it. Then you have his therapist, who's played by Anna Kendrick, and then you have his parents and all these other people surrounding him. I adore 50-50 so much, and it's so interesting because I've had people in my life get diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, you never know the outcome of what's going to happen, if they're going to make it or not. But I always love whenever I watch a movie or a show that focuses on a very sad situation, but then you find the good in that situation where you help uplift yourself and everything, whether it's making yourself laugh or make movies, read books, what have you, but just finding the thing that's going to help you be okay in the midst of this situation that isn't okay. I think this is the best acting that JGL has ever done. He's absolutely wonderful in this. He's great comedically. He's great dramatically. There's a particular sequence in a car towards the end of this movie that's absolutely heartbreaking to watch, because he lets out all this rage that he hadn't let out really before, pretty much the entire movie, he's sick, but he's at this certain point where he genuinely doesn't think he's going to make it. And he has this outburst in the car, and then he calls Anna Kendrick, and there's a great intimate phone call between the two of them. That's one of the highlights of the movie for me. And I think he was robbed of an Oscar nomination for this. I really think that this is the best acting he's ever done. He's so good in this. He's fantastic. And the screenplay, too, written by Will Reiser, who deserves a shout-out. He took his own experience of being somewhat diagnosed with cancer and bringing it to life. And then, actually, what was so interesting in reading about this film was that the character of Kyle, who's portrayed by Seth Rogen, was actually based on Rogen himself. So Seth Rogen and Will Reiser are very good friends, and Seth Rogen helped Will Reiser out in the midst of this personal struggle of being a cancer, someone diagnosed with cancer. And I just think the blend of comedy and drama here is utilized very strongly. It's very hard to mesh the two together and make them work, and I think here it works really well. When the movie is really funny, it's genuinely hysterical, in my opinion. Mainly because of Seth Rogen. I think Seth Rogen is the perfect comic relief for this. And when it's serious, it's actually really devastating to watch. You wouldn't even think that you're watching the same movie. You watch different scenes side by side, and you're like, is this even the same movie? It's really impressive what Jonathan Levine and Will Reiser were able to do. And Jonathan Levine is no stranger to working with JGL. They've worked together a couple of times since 50-50. But I really love the film. And it came out at the time where I was really starting to take film seriously. Like, looking back at 2011, I was really paying attention to film. I was paying attention to the Oscars. It was right after the Oscars where The Social Network lost Best Picture, and 2011 happened to be the year where I was paying attention to all these films coming out. This was one of them. Obviously, like, Moneyball, Midnight in Paris, The Descendants, The Artist, all these other films that were coming out that year, I was, like, so on top of. And I heard so much acclaim about this. And I saw it, and I really genuinely was over the moon about it. I thought it was great. It was funny. It was heartbreaking. It was heartfelt. It was honest, earnest, all these different emotions. And it's a good-hearted film with a very, very, very difficult topic. And it's able to maneuver between jokes and drama with surprisingly great finesse. It's really impressive what they were able to do with this film. I really, really loved it. And I just always love hearing stories about when they did the head shaving scene for this film, because they did that in one take, and it was the first day of filming, and Seth Rogen had talked about how they improvised pretty much the entire scene, which I think is great. I think that's hysterical that they were able to do that and pull that off. I'm a huge fan of 50-50. It's my favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt film. It's one of my favorite films of all time, honestly. It's a comfort film for me. I tend to go back to this film whenever I need a good laugh, or even when I need a good cry. I put this on and it just hits home for me immediately. It makes me laugh whenever I need it. It makes me cry when I need it. Really, when this movie makes me cry, it's like, it's really bad. Like, I will admit that I'm not a big crier. I get emotional during movies, but it's very hard for me to cry. And every time I watch this movie, somehow, even though I know what's coming is coming, it still hits me like a ton of bricks. I haven't talked about this film on this podcast yet, which is unfortunate, but I'm really glad that we finally got to do that, because I think this is a great showcase of blended comedy and drama, but I also think, more importantly, it's a great showcase of Joseph Gordon-Levitt's acting chops. He really is unbelievable. He's out of this world good in this film. I know that not everybody is as high on this film as probably I am, but I knew that deep down, this was my favorite film that starred Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I knew that if I hadn't put it as my number one, it would have felt wrong. As much as I love 500 Days of Summer, I'm like, 50-50 is just the film with him that connects with me the most. It's the one I've seen the most, and it's the one I think about the most when I think of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So 50-50 is my number one, so obviously this is not on your list. So I would just love to hear your thoughts on this movie, whether you've seen it or not. Is it a film that you're a fan of? Is it a film that not a fan of? Tell us your take on 50-50.
God damn, dude, you're gonna make me go watch 50-50 again. So here's the thing about 50-50. I remember seeing it, and I remember feeling a lot of the same things that you were feeling. I just don't for whatever reason, I didn't connect with it as strongly as you did. And that's not a knock at all against the movie. Again, I think that maybe that was just a time where I wasn't as impressionable when it came to film and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and like, you know, the impact of all of that. It was just kind of, it was a film to me. It was an emotional film, you know, and a dramatic comedy. And I think at that point, I wasn't a big fan of Seth Rogen either. It was kind of odd for me to see him. Obviously, he's the comedic relief, but to see him in a serious movie, I wasn't quite bought into that at that point. But no, it's a good film. It really is. And I, you know, shit, I'm going to have to go watch it again. you have me questioning things. I think Mysterious Skin was like the hard hitting drama that I included on my list. But I know that I remember 50/50 being a big a lot of conversation about 50/50 happening. It actually, I think, I'm pretty sure it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival when it came out. So yeah, it was really trying for the award season and really getting that kind of clout around it. But yeah, I will need to go rewatch this, and I will let the internet know if I reevaluate my list after I get a chance to rewatch it.
Yeah, definitely. And the last thing I want to say about 50/50 before we recap our list and move to the honorable mentions is that I'm just finding out this fact now. So originally, before JGL came onto the project, James McAvoy was supposed to star in this film, but he left the film due to personal reasons, as he was afraid of missing the birth of his first child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I mean, I think he would have done a very good job in the role. He's a very underrated actor too, but I don't know if I could see him in this role the way that JGL brought to life. And it's so funny too, because James McAvoy eventually later on went to play someone who had hair and then lost his hair for certain reasons when he played young Professor X.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a fascinating fun fact, because I think that James McAvoy, he is another great actor. I think very much one of those that we see and recognize but don't actually recognize enough. I think that he would have done a really, really great job in this movie, but I don't think it would have been the same film. I just can't see that same dynamic being the case with James McAvoy. And I'm pretty sure Joseph Gordon-Levitt has collaborated with like Seth Rogen on other projects as well. And so I get the sense that behind the scenes there's more chemistry and more partnership involved with Joseph Gordon-Levitt being a part of the film. Absolutely. But yeah, what a fascinating fun fact. What would this movie have been with James McAvoy? Interesting.
I don't know. And I don't know if I would have bought him and Seth Rogen working together. And that's not to say that it couldn't have worked.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would have. I don't know. But I just think JGL was like the perfect person to bring this character to life. I can't really picture anyone but him playing this character.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you tend to think sometimes of what things would have been like if this actor had stayed onto the role or if that actor was cast in said role. But I think 50/50 was perfect the way it was. And God, I just love Seth Rogen in it. I think he's just so freaking funny in it and everything. And when he discovers what's going on with Bryce Dallas Howard's character in particular, who, by the way, really, I cannot stress enough, she is such a bitch, capital B, in this movie. She is so fucking despicable in this movie. And literally when he comes across her at like the weirdest time, and then he takes a picture, and excuse my language, this is just a quote from the movie, he's like, "Oh, I fucking nailed that cunt, can you believe that?" I don't usually say that. I don't know why, it's great. It was like the perfect comedy for that particular moment of the movie. But yeah, 50/50 is my number one. And, you know, we have some films that we want to give a shout out to. But before we do that, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Thomas, what is your list?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So my number 5, I put Premium Rush. Number 4 was Inception. Number 3, The Walk. Number 2, Mysterious Skin. And number 1, 500 Days of Summer. With this list, I can guarantee nobody has the same order of movies. So I feel kind of proud about that.
And to recap my list, coming in at number 5 is Looper. Number 4 is The Wind Rises. Number 3, Don John. Number 2, 500 Days of Summer. And number 1 is 50-50. So that is it with our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So Thomas, what are some films that you want to give a shout out to?
You know what? Joseph Gordon-Levitt has an extensive history, filmography, and lots of movies that I either need to see or revisit. But there's really one that I want to give a shout out to that I do need to revisit and cannot revisit enough, really. And that's Treasure Planet. You know, we're in an era where animated movies are getting live action adaptations that do not deserve live action adaptations. But absolutely. Treasure Planet is one that should have long ago gotten a live action adaptation, that maybe at a point where Joseph Gordon-Levitt could have played the lead character. But this, I mentioned this one because this goes back around to voice acting and taking on an animated character at that time. You know, he obviously, we've seen him do voice work in plenty of projects since then, but yeah, him being a part of Treasure Planet is just something that I think is incredible and that I wish was more respected by the industry. That movie is really like among a very buried collection of films that were great animated movies. I think about things like Atlantis, The Lost World, I think is what it's called, right? Mm-hmm. Like these animated
films.
The Lost Empire, exactly. These are great animated movies, great stories. Stop remaking these Disney classics. They were fine as classics.
Although thank God those haven't been touched, mm-hmm. because we thankfully just have the animated version. Right. We don't have to worry about the fact that there's a live action one on top of that. So
you're right. You know, I think I just love these movies so much, and they are such rich sources of great storytelling. But you're right. As the animated forms, they were great. And so just with Treasure Planet, I think that that was a really entertaining movie, a really fun story, and having Joseph Gordon-Levitt's voice, contributed to one of these kind of projects is just great. That's like, that's my biggest shout out as an honorable mention here is I did want to get an animated voiceover role in.
Yeah, for me, my honorable mentions, I'm a huge fan of Brick, which was Rian Johnson's directorial debut and the first collaboration between the two of them. This was such a cool take on the noir mystery, where most of the characters that are solving this detective-like story are high schoolers. And it's not cliched or gimmicky and goofy and over the top. It's like actually genuinely very terrifying. And it's a really impressive debut. It's really wonderful stuff. And JGL with long hair and glasses, oh my god, like he rocks that look tremendously. It's kind of insane how he pulls that off. Yeah, Treasure Planet, gotta give a shout out to that, even though it's been such a long time since I've seen it. I haven't seen that since I was a kid. And I remember when Disney Plus came out, like 4 years ago, I said one of the first things I was gonna watch was Treasure Planet. It's been 4 years and I haven't even done that. I've had Disney Plus ever since it came out. Still haven't done that. Definitely need to change that very, very soon. In terms of obviously Inception, we talked about that. Dark Knight Rises, I wanna give a shout out to. Mm-hmm. I like Lincoln a lot. I think it was cool that he worked with Spielberg. The Walk. I love The Night Before. I watch it every Christmas. I think it's a very fun R-rated Christmas comedy. I think him, Seth Rogen, and Anthony Mackie work off each other very, very well. They have great chemistry. And Seth Rogen in particular is so funny in that. Him wearing his Star of David sweater and then him on all the drugs and everything. Him going into the church. It's great. It's hilarious. And the film itself is not that great in my opinion, but I really liked his performance as Edward Snowden. Another film where his voice was very deep and low and all this and everything. And when I found out he was cast as Snowden, I'm like, oh, that's a very good casting. That's a really good casting. It seems like the film that could poise him to get in his first long overdue Oscar nomination. Spoiler alert, it unfortunately didn't, but it took a while, like similar to The Walk, where it took a while for me to get acclimated to this voice that he was doing, except he wasn't doing an accent. He just like lowered his voice, like really lowered his voice. And he was great in the movie. He was great. I thought this was going to get him an Oscar nomination, even though the film was just very mid. I was like, oh, JGL could probably slide into the Best Actor 5. He didn't, unfortunately. To be honest, though, I don't know who I would have taken out that Best Actor 5. That Best Actor 5 that year was actually really fire, so I can't complain about that. But yeah, those are my honorable mentions. And to talk about some of the films that he has coming out, so there are four titles listed here right now as we speak. First up is the film that we're doing this episode in honor of, Floor and Son, which is a new film from John Carney, the man who made Once, Begin Again, and of course, Saint Street. So we both have already seen this film. You saw it at Sundance at the premiere, and I saw it at TIFF. This was actually the third movie I saw at the festival. I saw it on the first day of the fest and everything, right after the incredibly devastating double feature of Anatomy of a Fall and Zone of Interest. I'm like, I need an uplifted film. So I'm glad I saw this right after those two absolute downers of a film. Great films, by the way, but absolute downers. I'll ask you your thoughts first, because you went to the premiere of this movie. Mm-hmm. So to keep it short and sweet, what were your expectations going into the movie? Were you a fan of John Carney's previous work? And what did you think of the movie coming out of it?
Let me see if I can keep this short and sweet. John Carney, before this year, I knew John Carney for Sing Street. And let me tell you, that is a bar that you really should not hold most directors to. Sing Street is one of my favorite films of all time, and mm-hmm. it for years it's been a great film, so great that I hadn't bothered going back to his other films, Once and Begin Again. I didn't even look up what he'd done before. I have Sing Street, that's all I need to watch. But of course, knowing that Floor and Son was coming out at Sundance and I was going to Sundance, I did go back and watch Once. Fucking brilliant movie, so good. The production value is a little low.
It's so good.
Yeah, the production value is a little low. It's a directorial debut, low budget, but God, it's so good. Begin Again is also good. It's a solid sophomore film. And then there's Sing Street. Ah, what a filmography there, right? Like, what a filmography. The bar that I had for John Carney with Floor and Son was probably what a lot of people might say unattainable. Floor and Son is a fun movie. And honestly, the premiere screening that I went to, it was a fun time. You know, John Carney is just, he's a personality. That guy is funny. He's, you know, I could have a conversation with him anytime. He's just so entertaining to have conversation with. And there was also, they also did this little performance. I guess there's a song in the movie that the kid does, or rap, I mean. And so they did the rap live at the premiere. So
That's awesome.
It was a fun experience, and I enjoyed everything around the movie. I just wish the movie was better. It is uplifting. It is a positive film. The characters are likable. JGL, you know, he's there and he does a good job. But I think the effects of COVID were a little bit too apparent in this movie, with JGL being mostly confined to the computer screen. It's obvious that so much of his role was just pre-recorded and you know, kind of inserted into. There are points where he and I'm forgetting the lead actress's name. Eve Hewson. Yes. So there are a couple moments where mm-hmm. they do interact in one scene, and that's great. And also nice getting Joseph Gordon-Levitt back into music and film. I just wish it was better. I didn't like the final number. I thought that was a little phoned in, especially when you think of the final numbers of his other movies. I was mid about this film, and I'm so sad about that, because I know that a lot of people are enjoying how uplifting it is, and it is. It does accomplish that. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is, again, a presence that is really fun to have a part of this film, with his acting and musical talents a part of it. I kind of want to redo. I would love for John Carney to work with Joseph Gordon-Levitt in a realm where COVID isn't a restriction and where you can have him on set more and there is more music with him and the final number just slays, right? So.
Yeah, so I saw this at TIFF, like I said, and my expectations for this were pretty high as well, because mm-hmm. Sing Street is also one of my favorite films of all time. I cannot even fathom how much Sing Street means the world to me, how much Sean Carney's films mean the world to me. Mm-hmm. I loved Once, I loved Begin Again, but Sing Street is like, that's the one. Like, every filmmaker has... the one. That's the one for John Carney. Mm-hmm. So I was very excited to know that he was making another film. It's been a long time coming, and the fact that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in it, I was like, that's awesome, that's great. And while I didn't love the film, I had a really good time with it. I thought it was very entertaining. I think I'm a little higher on it than you, but I really overall enjoyed it, and I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt is a great addition to this. I love seeing his musical abilities brought on screen, but Eve Hewson knocked it out of the park. She was unbelievably good. The fact that she's Bono's daughter and has these great acting chops, I'm so impressed, and I cannot wait to see more of her. But yeah, it's definitely a step down from John Carney's previous work. It's easily the weakest film he's done. But that's not to say that it's a bad film by any means, because it's not a bad film at all. It's not perfect. It has its moments. The last song, I agree, I wasn't as high on the last song as the rest of the musical numbers in the film. But it's a good outing from John Carney, and it's a good JGL performance. I have no complaints there regarding that. So I'm very curious to see how everyone feels when it comes out on Apple TV+. I think this is going to do very well with audiences. I think they're going to be like, oh, that was a feel-good movie, and that's kind of what I wanted and what have you. I think if you're a fan of John Carney's previous work, you're probably going to get some enjoyment out of this. It's not a bad film by any means. I haven't met anyone that said this film sucks, but there are people similar to Thomas where they weren't as high on this film as they were with other John Carney outings. But to talk about the films that he does have coming out that we're not too sure when they're going to come out, what have you, first up is a film called Providence, which co-stars him and Lily James. It is about a cop in a small island town who has to investigate a murder and discovery of a large sum of money. So it sounds very generic. It sounds nothing original whatsoever. But JGL and Lily James, that's quite apparent that I'm very much behind. I love both of them. Huge Lily James fan. Love her so much. And Simon Rex is in this, which automatically gets me excited because I don't care what anyone listening has to say about Red Rocket. You could like that movie or you could hate that movie, but that performance in Red Rocket to me is genuinely incredible. It's out of this world good. And I always get excited whenever I hear that Simon Rex is going to be in something else. So I don't know too much about this film, but I guess I'll add it to my list because of who's in it and everything. And then there's this film called Killer Heat, which co-stars him with Richard Madden, and it's a Snowden reunion because Shailene Woodley is also in it. So here's the synopsis as follows. On a remote Greek island, twin brothers Richard Madden, I guess he plays Chu, are caught in a violent love triangle, and then a damaged detective known as the Jealousy Man, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is brought in to investigate the case. Well, that sounds like it could be a really good time, or it sounds like it could be a piece of poop. But you know, these three actors being in it, sure, I guess Richard Madden is playing two people, and Richard Madden, he's good, I like him, so two of him, that could be interesting for sure. And the last film he has coming out, and I honestly forgot until 5 minutes ago that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in this, and that is Beverly Hills Cop, Axel Foley. This is the fourth Beverly Hills Cop movie, a film that they've been trying to make for like 30 years at this point. Eddie Murphy's coming back, and then you have some other cast members come back, but then you also have some new additions, including Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You have Taylor Page, who is best known for being in Zola. And then you have Kevin Bacon in it, and you can never go wrong with the Bacon in any movie that he's in. You can never go wrong with that addition whatsoever. I do like Beverly Hills Cop a lot. I admittedly have never seen the sequels. I've heard very middling things about both of them, especially that third one. I've heard nothing but bad things about that third one. The second one has always had my intrigue because it was directed by Tony Scott. But this seems to be a period where Eddie Murphy's kind of making his return to doing these comedies. He obviously just did a sequel to Coming to America a few years ago, which was, unfortunately, in my opinion, a massive pile of garbage. That was really a huge letdown. But he did Dolomize My Name a few years ago, and that film was genuinely incredible. Honestly, should have gotten him an Oscar nomination, personally. But, yeah, I'm curious to know what role JGL plays in this. I think him and Eddie Murphy is a very cool pairing, and I'm very curious to see how this film pans out for sure. So, talking about all these films coming out, give your opinions on each of these films coming out.
Is Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it? Yes, I'll be going to see it. No, they all sound great. I mean, they sound like really promising productions, and I think the big takeaway from our conversation here is that even if the movie is not great, what is always reliable is Joseph Gordon-Levitt and his performances. I cannot think of a time where he has disappointed in a project. So that is kind of my thinking about upcoming projects. I was just cruising through IMDb, and I did notice this one that is in development. And when in development means I have no idea like how far along it's going to go. But I saw this movie called Wingman, where in the director category is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's name. And he's also co-writer on it, it looks like, according to IMDb, and Channing Tatum is supposed to star in it. And it's a comedy musical. And the log line is just, the story follows two pilots who crash land in Las Vegas. Like, I need more information about this movie. Most importantly, when is this coming out? Because this sounds fantastic.
That sounds great.
So.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna keep tabs on this movie and see how it progresses through development. And hope that we're able to see this come out at some point.
Yes, please. Absolutely. Man, that's great. That sounds awesome. But, you know, we've reached the end of this discussion. And, you know, just final thoughts on Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Mm-hmm. Such a likable dude. Such a fantastic on-screen presence. I love that he's been acting for pretty much his whole life. I love that he's been acting my entire life. I love the fact that I would watch a movie with him constantly when I was a kid, and just seeing the evolution of him as an actor and as a filmmaker too is so, so impressive. I cannot wait to see what's to come from his career. The guy hasn't aged either. The guy does not look like he's in his 40s. I don't believe for a second that he's in his 40s. But that's just the power of Hollywood, I guess. No, he's great. I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I'm so glad that we got to talk about him today. So what are your final thoughts on JGL?
Yeah, my final thoughts on JGL. Look, bro, if you're listening and happen to come to Vancouver or Seattle at some point, hit me up. Let's hang. Let's chat. Would love to just hang out with you at some point. No, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, just like you said, just seems like a super cool dude. He's, as we've, you know, the point that we've belabored, he's a super talented entertainer. And I, you know, anything that has his name attached to it, I am highly, highly interested in. And so this was a really awesome conversation. I enjoyed, you know, chatting about some of our favorite films of his. And I can't wait to see what else he does in his career. Like win an Oscar. Like that has to happen at some point, right?
I just want him to at least get nominated for an Oscar. Like, there were so many opportunities. I'm sorry. You could have nominated him for 500 Days. You could have nominated him for 50-50. Hell, you could have nominated him for Write in Don John. You could have nominated him for something. Hell, if the Academy, which had such a hard-on for Trial of Chicago 7, said, you know, even though JGL didn't really do much in the Trial of the Chicago 7, let's give him a nomination just because why not?
Right. The Academy is not above legacy awards, okay? Like, we see it all the time. And if anyone's deserving of a legacy award, it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
It's him. Exactly. Oh, man. Great stuff. Great stuff. Thomas, thank you so much for coming on to talk to me about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It was a blast getting to have you on gushing about this wonderful man's filmography. So thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Would love to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. And tell the audience where they can find you online. Where could they find your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can connect with me on connect with me personally on Twitter and Instagram at beingtsj. But you can also find my work at thisisforreal.com. For real, of course, spelled F-O-R-R-E-E-L. For real is also on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, even TikTok. You can find, you know, if you search This Is For Real, I think the handle varies by platform a little bit. But all the links are on the website as well, so you can find everything there.
I will put links for that in the description below, and you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield. You guys can subscribe to this podcast on any podcast and platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt films. I'm so curious to hear your guys' list to see if we have any overlaps or whatnot. And tell Thomas that he needs to rewatch 50-50 because it is honestly the best thing that JGL has ever done.
I will make time for that, I promise.
You definitely should. You absolutely should. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Be on the lookout for more great episodes coming soon. Lots of great guests, lots of great topics. Stay tuned for all of that, and I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.